Hello, I'm Dr. Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Men's Monday here on Mind Talk, the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Men's Monday, we focus on all things for and about men.
Allow me to introduce you to today's guest. He is Richard E. Greenberg, and Richard Greenberg is the father of four, which certainly makes him an expert about his four. He has written a book that immediately caught my eye. I think it will catch yours as well. Raising Children That Other People Like to Be Around. I think we can all relate to that on a lot of levels. The subtitle is Five Common Sense Musts from a Father's Point of View. Richard Greenberg, thank you and welcome for joining us here on Mind Talk.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on, Doctor.
Now, Richard, your next book, given that you and your wife have been together for 35 years,
yes,
I think your next book should be How to Have a Marriage with Someone You Can Stand to Be Around for 35 Years.
It's very funny that you mentioned that. I'm calling my next book a prequel to the parenting book, and it is about relationships.
Excellent.
Yes, well, and it started as being called Things I've Learned from My Wife. And now it's evolving into a different title, but I believe the subtitle of the book will be Or Things I've Learned from My Wife.
Okay, that sounds very reasonable. A 35-year-old marriage is amazing. So congratulations to the two of you on that one.
Thank you.
Now, you are a native of Los Angeles, and you and your wife have three adult sons and one daughter, and you say parents can change the world.
Well, I believe that we can. I think that our job is to raise good citizens, and good citizens are respectful people who understand that not everybody in the world is exactly the same as they are, but believes that everybody has a right to be who they are. And, that's kind of an easy way to put it, but the bottom line is that it's not just about them. It's about being in a family. It's about being in a community, and it's about being part of the world.
Now, you're saying that parents can make a huge difference in their children's lives and thus in the world, but in fact, I can think of any number of parents who have said to me, what can I do? My kid is my kid. They don't listen. They're going to do whatever they want to do. I can't have any impact. What do you say to those parents?
Well, I don't think that your child comes out with a manifest destiny. I don't think our children are born being who they are or what they're going to be. And so what I say to that parent is that you have to have the confidence to know that you can affect your child.
Mm.
And for you to release yourself of the responsibility of guiding them to be respectful people and to behave properly is not the solution to creating a child that behaves properly. And so in my book, I actually, have broken the process down into five steps to raising children that I think are very helpful, and it's very sort of bite-sized. I use the word smart, so mm-hmm. They can set an example, they can make the rules, they can apply those rules, they can respect themselves. And then most importantly, and this goes with setting an example, understand that everything they do is teaching their children something.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they don't take responsibility for their children's behavior, why should their children take responsibility for their behavior? So I would just say to that person, I think you're running away from the fact that you need to be a more active and expect more from your children, a more active parent, and expect more from your children than you are, because you have the right to expect them to behave the way you want them to behave.
Well, you're using words that, quite frankly, would be dubbed by many as just sort of old school kind of philosophy. I mean, you're using respect and, you're talking about kids being, mindful and respectful and taking responsibility. What's that about?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's about my own laziness. It's about the fact that I want my children to behave the way I want them to behave.
Okay.
I want to live in a house where I know what the rules are and they know what the rules are, and I don't have to deal with children who aren't going to conform to my expectations. And ironically, I think there are a lot of parents who think that having expectations and being, you know, reasonably strict, meaning imposing your sense of order, decreases your child's, quote, creativity.
Right.
But when you look at the creative arts and you look at the structure of a pop song, for example, you know, there are millions of pop songs that are made out of the same four chords, and they all have the same sort of verse, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus structure. And as a result, there is structure in creativity. And teaching our children to overcome adversity, which is when you say as a parent, no, you can't do that, so that they have to either figure out how to get you to say yes or just live with the consequences of having gotten a no, is a very important part of life, because life is full of adversity.
Well, I hear you. And not to play devil's advocate, but to play devil's advocate anyway.
Sure.
I'm thinking about an article that generated a lot of buzz, if you will. Perhaps it's a year or so old, or maybe earlier, I'm not sure. But it was an article about parents who were allowing their children at prom time to have the prom celebration at home, and it included drinking and sleepovers.
Well, so, you know, my wife and I have, as we've discussed, we have these four children, and each of them had a prom. And in each case, our kids, you know, turned out to be the designated drivers. Now, I'm not trying to pin a posy on myself, but the values that we gave them at home are the values that they carry with them into the field. And so to, you know, getting back to what your last question was, because I strayed a little bit, terms like respect and kindness and truthfulness, those don't go out of fashion. Those come from us. Those expectations happen at home. So when my kids went to those proms and they saw kids get sick and drunk and throw up, they came home and they said, I can't believe those kids are such idiots, and that they would speak to us about it.
Mm.
Now, look, my kids are adults now. They order drinks when we go to dinner. Mm-hmm. They smoke pot. They live a regular lifestyle for people their age. But, you know, they do it in moderation, and they understand, and they talk to us about it. And it's not, there's no embarrassment, there's no problem, there's no competition or anger between us, because we've always been forthright about these things. They know our expectations. They also knew that if they were ever at a prom and they were drunk, or they were anywhere and they were drunk, they could phone us and we would come get them, and there would be no recrimination. They would not be punished. There would be a discussion about the use of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the other hand, we have friends who used to do exactly what you described, and they used to let their kids drink. And those people were concerned that their children wouldn't be cool
right.
if they weren't among the drinking kids. And we never worried about whether our kids were
okay.
cool or not, because we didn't worry about whether we were cool or not. And that is a very important thing to do, is to say, this is how our family operates. We don't care about the world. We care about how we treat each other here in the house. And you can go out into the world, but remember, this is a place you can count on your parents to be level-headed, listening, and caring about you. And that was part of that first part, set an example. What's home like? They never got attacked when they came home, and that grew out of the fact that as a child, I got attacked every time I came home.
Huh.
You know, my bed wasn't made, my room wasn't neat, I hadn't done my homework. All of those things just completely clouded the issue that I think my parents really loved me. But I didn't know that, because they were always attacking me
right.
to try and sort of shape my character. And we gave our children their character from the inside out.
Interesting. What do you mean by that, from the inside out?
Well, I mean that we built their self-confidence and their understanding of themselves, not from whether they made their bed or whether their hair was cut properly and combed properly, or, you know, we taught them proper hygiene, but
mm-hmm.
we taught them to respect themselves. We taught them to be proud of themselves. And we did that not by falsely praising them, but by giving them a high bar. Because when they achieve the high bar, they know they're good kids. In my book, I say rules are the arms with which your children can embrace themselves.
Yeah.
And I remember as a child thinking, I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy because my mom said to be home at 4, and I'm home at 4. And my mom said to park my bike in the garage, and I parked my bike in the garage. I didn't lay it down at the front door, which I did, you know, 5 times, and my dad tripped on it on his way home from work, and I got in big trouble, and it was like, no, you need to park your bike in the garage. when I did that, I felt good about myself.
Mm.
And if you give your children reasons to feel good about themselves, when they have that character, then all that other stuff that I need to make my hair blue, I want to get an earring, all that other stuff is just garnish on the main course.
Literally.
Yeah.
And you say that it takes solid concentration in the early years, and that with that solid concentration, you set yourself up for a pleasurable, lifelong parenting experience. And again, you know, there are so many parents who, if they paid attention to that as a base or a perspective, would probably find parenting a lot more pleasurable than many parents do, quite frankly. When you say it takes solid concentration in the early years, what do you mean? What goes into that?
I think resolve. I think that, you know, when you say it's bedtime to a two-year-old, it's bedtime. You know, it's like it's 7:30 or 8 o'clock, whenever you want that kid to go to bed. When you say that it's bedtime, you put them in bed, and they're going to cry, and they don't want to go to bed. But by the way, as a parent, you get to know when your child has reached that X plus one, where the fact that they're tired is what makes them cry. So when you tell them that they're tired, it makes them cry even more.
Okay.
And but when you have a rule, when you have an expectation of them, you have to say to yourself, I'm doing this. It's not going to be fun for my child. They're not going to be happy that I'm telling them that if they don't eat their dinner now, they're not going to get any later. Or it's bedtime and they need to go to bed and stay in bed, that's going to cause a ruckus. But you know what? I'm going to have to live through this ruckus. And if I live through the ruckus two or three times, they'll know that I mean business. And when they know that I mean business, then I have a lot more credibility. My wife and I were once babysitting a niece and a nephew, and they were probably 12 or 13, and their parents were leaving to go out. And we said, hey, maybe we'll all go to a movie. Go ask your mom and dad if it's okay. So they went and they asked their mom and dad if it was okay. And they came back and they said, well, mom said it's not okay. And we said, oh, okay, well, then we'll stay. And she said, but if I ask her 23 times, the 24th time she'll say it's okay. So let me go ask her again. And sure enough, came back like 5 minutes later. It was like, okay, mom said it's okay. And you know, we were in college, and we just like looked at each other and said, well, there's a lesson for you.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I mean, that, you know, I say it's easier to lighten up than it is to tighten up.
Mm.
That, you know, when you have young children, you're physically bigger than they are, and they're completely these, you know, blank tablets. So what you teach them, and just by nature of your size and the example you set, they just want to do. They just want to be just like you. They just want to conform because they don't want to see you get angry because you're their mom and dad. So if you do that when they're young, when they're older, they don't give you any trouble. You don't have a sassy child that says, well, why should I do that? And the answer is because I said you should do that. And when you were young, when I was, you know, kept the line there, you learn to understand that when I say that, I mean it. But if you don't do it when they're young, then they become that niece or nephew that says, well, if I ask mom 20 times, she'll say it's okay. And that's not the way to run a house. It's not the way to run a business.
It's not the way to run a relationship.
Exactly.
It teaches the kids lots of different things. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to revisit the idea of dealing with the fact that you as a parent can make decisions that really send your children over the edge. So many parents don't want to be seen as the bad guy. So that's where we'll pick up when we come back. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and we are talking about how to raise children that other people actually like to be around. We'll be right back. Richard Greenberg, author of Raising Your Children That Other People Like to Be Around, what do you tell yourself, what do you do as a parent if you're giving your child some instruction and your child is just absolutely enraged with you and doesn't want to do it? How do you deal with the feelings that you're a bad parent because your child is angry with you?
Well, first off, I don't think you ever need to feel that you're a bad parent. I think that judging yourself is a very slippery slope.
Indeed.
And that if you have in mind that what you're doing is what you believe is best for your child, then I think the chances are you're being a good parent. And you, in fact, are the only parent they have. So when it was very early in our child, our raising children period, our parenting, and one day, and I was a workaholic, and I would get home at 8 or 8:30 at night, and one day my wife said to me, you know, Larry, who lives across the street, he comes home at like 5:30 every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get home by 5:30, like, or something, or at a more reasonable hour, our children aren't going to know who their father is. And I said to her, well, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm their father. I'm the only father they have. And they're not comparing me to Larry. They just know that Dad gets home when Dad gets home. And I think that it's, you know, by the way, my brilliant wife then said to me, okay, I'll tell you what. You come home one night a week for dinner, minimally, with the dinner with the kids, where we have proper manners and we sit around the table and we talk. And then you don't work every weekend. You work one weekend a month. And that was like, oh, okay. And so I did that, and I started being home for dinner. And then that was so pleasurable that I started sort of coming home for dinner more often. And, you know, work. I did the work at home. I did it on my computer. So, you know, the message got through, but the other message that surfaced was this one that was, I don't compare myself to other parents.
Mm.
And I think it's trouble when you do. You know,
okay.
there is way too much anxiety that can be generated by that process. And I don't think anxiety is a very good thing to have in your life, and certainly not to be vibrating with around your children. So confidence, I think, is very crucial. And one of the things my book is about, I think the most important thing is that we all have the resources we need to be confident parents. And what we need to do is find those resources and then believe in them. And the bottom line is that you're automatically qualified to be a good parent by the fact that you're 20 years older, 15 years older, however many years older you are than the person that's come into your life at age zero, because that person knows nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have much more life experience. So what you can do is teach them to survive the same way that you have survived. And ideally, that's with good manners and respecting the world and other people and knowing not to walk on a red light and all of the basics that are parental basics, and take heart in the fact that you've made it to where you are. Therefore, you probably can guide your child. You know they should go to the doctor. You
mm-hmm.
know there are things that should happen. And those are the things that you have to do. And then, as I said to you, I'm a little lazy. I didn't want to fight with my children. So I just said to them, look, you can have a tantrum. That's okay with me. Go crazy. I'm not a person who tantrums. That's not how we get our way in this family. And they get tired of that after a while. It's like, so when you ask me, what do you do with that unruly child?
Uh-huh.
It depends what the age of that unruly child is. But often we would just say, let's go to your room, and you can stay in your room. This is now you have a reasonable toddler, three years old, four years old.
Uh-huh.
You can stay in your room, and when you feel ready to come out, you can come out. And what would happen is that they would come out, and if they were whiny or, you know, just screaming again, you would go, oop, you came out too soon. You need to go back to your room.
Okay.
But you can't allow your child's behavior to start causing a sympathetic vibration inside of you. You can't say, I relate to the pain this child is in because my parents, you know, said no to me. The fact is there's a good reason for saying no, and it's an especially good reason if you want there to be order and calm in your house.
You know, there's a lot of what you're saying that really is impacted upon by how you experienced your own world as a little one and your own parents. And so there's a part in your book where you offer a questionnaire, a parent questionnaire. And, you know, I wonder, which I'd like to go through at this point, but the other thing that I want to attach to this part of the conversation is, if you have had really unpleasant experiences with parenting as you were growing up, I mean, you talked about, you know, always having to get something right or to do being judged as a little one. If that's your experience, how do you get away from that and create a parenting style that is actually healthier? How do you do that if you didn't live it yourself?
You know, it's so interesting. The reason I put the parenting questionnaire in is exactly that, because many of us live the way we were parented, but very few of us think about it sort of analytically. Mm. And my parents criticized me for my own good. You know that thing, like,
right?
Just everything was like, I could have given a great performance as a musician or as an athlete, and they would have said something like, well, you know, if you just, you know, my mother would say, you know, you could get singing lessons. I'd be in the lead in a musical. You know, you could get singing lessons at Santa Monica College. I mean, I was a relative adult when she said that, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like, no, people come to me for singing lessons. But that wasn't the way that it worked with her.
Gotcha.
And so that sort of kind of criticism just gives you doubt. So when I examined the things that my parents did that were hurtful to me, I decided with my wife that I wasn't going to repeat those things with mm-hmm. my children. And so, you know, there were a couple of examples in the book of things that happened that really changed my perception of how to cheer for kids who are playing sports. I play softball every Sunday. I've done it for 40 years. I know everything basically about the game of baseball and softball in terms of what to play and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go out with my kids and they're playing and they make an error, I don't talk to them about the error. I talk to them about how the game went, how they felt about it. They know they made an error. They don't need me jumping in their stuff to remind them of that.
Hmm.
And that is the kind of thing that I had to learn to let go of, that sort of how to criticize your child. And at one point, I have one of my sons just knew this way to, like, pull my chain. He just used to get me angry about things because he would just say the dumbest stuff, you know. At one point, he said to me, Dad, why do you always get so upset with me when I say these things? And I looked at him and I said, you need to learn how to say them so that I don't get upset. You know, he would say something like, he'd have a great job. This is as an adult. He'd have a great job. And then he'd say to me, you know, I'm going to leave this job because so-and-so wants me to come work over there. And it's like, and I would say, did you ask them this? Did you do this? Is there a contract? Blah, blah, whatever it is. And he would go, well, no, I haven't really talked to the other people yet. And I said, well, then why are you talking about leaving your great job? Well, because, and it was like, Ben, don't talk to me about that like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just say to me, you know, Dad, I have another opportunity on the horizon. Let's talk about that. And then, and he learned how to do it.
Okay.
So we taught each other how to communicate. And basically, that comes out of my having learned that what my parents did that hurt my feelings was not show respect for who I was and what I was learning and for my adulthood. And that questionnaire has questions in it that are like, what are the things your parents did that made you feel great?
Right.
And what are the things that your parents did that made you feel terrible? How do you want to repeat the things that made you feel great? And how do you want to repeat the things that, or not repeat the things that made you feel terrible? So I felt great parking my bike in the garage when that was one of the assignments I had, because I knew I was being good.
Mm.
I felt terrible when my parents wouldn't let me feel successful. And, you know, I got a trophy when I participated in sports, and I frankly believe that you should get a participation trophy because it marks your having done a season of the sport,
right,
even if you stunk at it, because it's really about being on a team. That's what you're getting a trophy for, is being part of a team, and
mm-hmm.
I think those trophies remind us that we were all in this together. But I don't think you give a kid the most valuable player award if they weren't a very good player.
Okay.
And that's where I have, you know, kids know whether they're good or not. They in their own community have a very solid pecking order. And so, you know, I wasn't fooling anybody by saying I'm a great baseball player, because when I was young, I wasn't. Now I'm old. I know, you know, I'm just a wily veteran. But in those days, I was just a mediocre athlete.
You know, it sounds like you're suggesting that people have these dialogues, this parent question, for example, have this dialogue with yourself individually and then with your partner, if a partner is available, maybe even before you have the child.
Yeah, I think that, you know, having children is a very serious job and a very serious obligation. And, you know, before you go to a job interview, you learn all about the company that you're going to be visiting.
True.
I mean, I hope you do.
True.
And I think that as you head into the relationship that you're going to have with your child, you should get some idea of, you know, these ghosts in your nursery.
Mm.
What are these things that exist in you that are the residual of the way you were parented? And if you wanted to fix those things, now is the time to be aware of it, because you can. We don't have to be the same parents our parents were. And in fact, you know, there were times when my kids were young and they would say to me after a day with their grandpa, they would go, I can't believe that you're that guy's son, because my dad was really strict and he, you know, could be very mean to them, and but he was also very loving. So it was just, they're smarter than we give them credit for. And as they get older and they get more perceptive, it's really fun to hear what they have to say and what they perceive. And it is a constant evolution, even to this day, as I said. You know, now we talk about job offers and what's going on with life, but it's basically the same conversation. Am I a good boy? Yes, you're a good boy.
Yeah.
And how is my life working out? You know, when I respect them every day and I laugh at their jokes and we talk to each other, that's all the same communication, only it's the positive stuff. They don't force me to be negative with them. They don't force me to have to say to them, I think you're doing the wrong thing here. And when they do, I just say, you know, I'm going to say this once. You should not have quit that job without having another job to go to. And, you know, that's the kind of typical thing you end up saying. It's
okay.
Like, these are life lessons. And then you get the answer that is, well, Dad, I'm really young, and if I wasn't going to do it at this point in my life, when would I do it? I'd rather quit a job before I had two kids to feed than, you know, after. And you have to look and go, hey, you're right.
All right, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but before we do that, you know, this idea that a parent can say to a child, you're right, versus the parent always having to be right. That's a struggle that a number of parents get engaged in. Do parents have to be always right, or is it okay to show a more human face?
I love that you found that as the subject there, because the fact is that I know a lot of parents who don't allow themselves to allow their children to be right.
Mm.
And I think that kids can be right. I've learned this in different ways. I'll say that it really started for me when my kids got to college age, where, you know, one of my sons said to me, I'm going to be a history major. And I said, why would you want to be a history major? I mean, be an English major. I mean, as an English major, you know, you learn how to communicate and how to tell a story. And, you know, and he looked at me and said, you know, Dad, history is English. It's just stories that have already been told. And I was like, okay, you understand. You're done. Go be a history major. And it served him very well.
Mm.
And I think that being a person who can learn from your child and apologize to your child, you know, there have been times when you make a mistake and you end up having to say to your kid, you know, I was wrong about the fact that so-and-so's mom was going to pick you up at the park and that's not going to happen, or whatever these little things are that come along, or you can't sleep at your friend's house tonight because mom and I had a plan and the babysitter's coming, and that's just the way life goes.
Mm.
And so you end up having to teach them the concept that is, you know, and this is one of the tough parts of parenting, you can't always get what you want. It's a very important lesson to teach.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, but you deserve everything in the world because you're the most wonderful kid alive. So you want your kid to believe in themselves and to have a great self-image and to believe that they are smart and capable and honest and trustworthy. And even though they're all those things, even though they park their bike in the garage,
mm-hmm.
sometimes things don't go their way. And that's a very important lesson to teach.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we will continue with Richard Greenberg talking about how he was able, with his wife of 35 years,
to raise children that other people can stand to be around. We'll be right back. Richard, you know, as I think about the conversation that we're having right now, we're having a very calm, reasonable conversation about essentially calm and reasonable children. But what if you have a child who just sends you out of your mind with their antics, whether they are being just a dangerous kid and doing silly things that aren't safe, or if they're actually harming themselves, if they're hanging out with the wrong folks, or they're drinking or doing drugs? I mean, how do you deal with, do you have that same quiet, calm conversation with that child?
I think that you have to look for the core of that behavior. You have to look for why that child is seeking your attention in a negative way. You know, it's, we all have dealt with kids like that, and I often think that kids who go down that road don't feel as though you're listening as a parent. I don't think they just spin off because it's in their DNA. I think that, you know, I had this expression that, and it is that children are like pieces of paper in a typewriter, and our job is to set the margins on the piece of paper. Mm. Because when they're teenagers, they're supposed to go outside those margins. They're just not supposed to go off the page.
Okay.
And if you don't set the margins, then they go off the page. It's like you have to put guide rails on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they go off the lane markers and they hit the guide rail, at least they stay on the highway. And I think that what, you know, if your child is old enough so that their behavior is actually potentially destructive and that they, you know, are exhibiting a lack of respect for you as a parent and you've tried everything and you're at your wit's end, I think you have to get professional help and try and sort of examine with them what is motivating that behavior. And that doesn't mean, you know, it's motivating my behavior because I need to have a box of Red Vines every 5 minutes.
Okay.
That's not how that problem is solved, because that's not what it's about. But sometimes it comes out that you are on your cell phone all day long and you're not listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you and mom fight so much in the house, I just can't stand being there.
Yeah.
We learn a lot from our children, and I think that our children reflect a lot of things about our own lives, and sometimes in that reflection we avoid the discussion that is there, and I guess that I'm a naturally open person and that I try to feel what other people are feeling or mm-hmm. thinking, and so mm-hmm. especially with my children, I was always just a little bit too nosy. Now you can be way too nosy, in which case your child will run away because they don't want you in their business. Or you can just be confident and calm that they can speak with you. When I was a young boy, I'd say I was 7 or 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
I broke something in my parents' living room. And it was a valuable something. I don't even remember what it was, but I was playing with a little metal airplane, and I threw it, and it broke this crystal thing.
Oops.
And you know, I knew I was going to get spanked or something, and my mom said, well, maybe we should give you an armistice. And I said, well, what's that? And she said, An armistice means that you can ask, if you will tell us the truth about what happened, you ask for an armistice. And that, if we give you an armistice, it means you can ask, you can tell us the truth about what happened, and then we will discuss with you how we believe you should be punished. And instead of us hitting you or getting angry or going off the handle, we have a mechanism for telling the truth. So anytime I did anything wrong, I could come in and I could say, can I have an armistice? Mm. And my parents would always say, it depends. But it really meant that I was going to have to confess to a crime, okay. And then they were going to sit there and go, in this case, they said, well, what were you doing wrong? And I said, well, I was playing with my airplane in the living room. And how can you solve that problem? I will not play in the living room anymore. Okay, so, you know, what do you think we should do about that? And I would say something like, I will take out the trash every day for the next week. And they would say to me, your job is to take out the trash anyway. Why don't you wash your dad's car? And that would be it. That was how the problem got solved. So it was very reasonable, and my voice was heard, and I was given an opportunity to be truthful. And that, I think, is if you can't get a hold of your kid, I think you have to say to that misbehaved kid, let's take an opportunity here to listen to what you have to say. Okay. We are all ears. What's going on with you? And then not let them squirm out of it and not let it be the wrong time or, you know, because those are the things that get in the way. It's like, oh, I don't want to talk about it now. And that's where you as a parent have to say, now is when we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
You have nothing else to do. Now is when we're going to talk about it. And that's it. You can't, they're not the arbiters of when the discussion should occur. We as parents have to have the confidence to be the people who run the family.
It's interesting to hear you continue to go back to essentially your five musts of setting the example, making the rules, applying the rules. I mean, I hear you doing that, talking about that consistently, as well as respecting yourself and teaching. But let's talk about applying the rules. Let's continue to talk about that. Because, again, that is certainly something that, you know, sort of a confounding thing for many parents, particularly if there is a separation in the household. I mean, you and your wife have been fortunate that you've been able to stay together for 35 years. I think about those children who are in two-parent households, and there's, you know, mom sets a rule here, dad sets a rule there. Then one day mom decides that, yeah, maybe the rule's not so much, you know, and it gets crazy making for everybody, particularly if the parents start trying to outdo each other with rule flexibility.
Well, I think a lot of divorced parents end up being defensive, and they think that they've done something painful to their children, and as a result, they want to coddle those children or try and make it up to them. And the fact is that I think of divorce as a fact of life. It's like mom and dad don't get along, and rather than set the example of having two people who don't get along be the people guiding you through life, we've decided to make a decision to simplify our lives, and we're going to split. And then when you're in my house, you're going to follow my rules, and when you're in your mom's house, you'll follow her rules. They may be different than my rules, but one of the benefits of divorce that I've found for many men is that at least the rules get to be the rules the guy wants them to be. Mm. That, you know, and I've found many fathers who were very lackadaisical as dads, and they weren't really that tuned into their kids. And suddenly they have this responsibility to have a relationship with their child, and it has really caused them to step up. And I've seen men go from, you know, go to the office, don't spend much time with the kid, offload all that responsibility, and now they have their kids with them, and they begin to get a kick out of their kids. And they're, you know, they begin to realize that they have to, like, civilize themselves. They have to sit down for meals. They have to set that example. So it's not, you know, divorce doesn't have to be seen as a huge negative. And I think letting your children see that you're happy is probably as important as staying together. And that kind of, again, I'm speaking from, you know, just observation, because I'm in a very good, happy marriage, which, by the way, we work at. We work at it by communicating and by ignoring the little things that would cause other people to get upset. We just, you know, we know how not to hurt each other. And that's really the key, is that you go through life and you do a lot of stuff. And a lot of it's sort of marginal, and it's who watches what channel or what's going on. Right. But there are very deep cuts you can make. And you need to choose not to make the deep cuts in order to keep a relationship on a positive note. And I think, you know, the concept of single parenting, it's much harder. I think it is much harder. But I also think that the kids get to know who their mom is on her own. Mm-hmm. And if their mom was a crazy neurotic person, then they're going to learn that. They're going to come home to their dad and say, oh, it's so much more peaceful here.
Yeah,
I really like staying here. So it only is an opportunity to have a more individualized relationship with your child. And as far as the rules that you want to enforce, the rules are the rules in my house. In my house, okay. When I say to you we're going to go to bed, I mean we're going to go to bed.
Okay.
And I think it allows for a lot more clarity with kids. I don't think kids are confused. I think they're smart.
Okay.
I think they know what they can get from their mom, and they know what they can get from their dad. And that's, you know, they're playing that game, and they know how it works. And so you just have to be true to yourself, regardless of your marital situation.
You say that there's a great need for emotional generosity. And, you know, folks can take that lots of different ways. There's the parent who thinks that emotional generosity means giving the child whatever they feel as though they need at the moment for as many moments as they need it. But I don't think that's what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
I think that, you know, emotional generosity to me means that you give your child the benefit of the doubt. You teach them to be aware of the feelings of other people. And I think what I'm really talking about is doing not necessarily what you want to do, but what's best for your child.
Okay.
So if it's a Saturday afternoon and I'm tired and I would just as soon stay home, but my kid's got a Little League game, I'm going to go to the Little League game, and I'm going to sit in the stands, and I'm going to cheer for my kid, and I'm going to take my nap later in the day because I want to be there. And I have to force myself to do that because I was at work really late last night, and I don't want to go to the park on Saturday at 1 o'clock in the blazing sun and watch my kid play baseball. But you know what? It's my job as a parent to do that, and that is a form of emotional generosity because my going there is going to fill the well in my child that wants to receive that emotion.
There's something that you said a few minutes ago that I want to go back to just for a moment, because I think it's a critical way to think about your child. We were talking about the child whose behavior is sending you over the edge, and you responded by suggesting that the parent think about why it is that the child is seeking attention in a negative way. And that is, I think, so much healthier a way to look at it than this kid is just a bad kid, or this kid is just like his father or just like her mother, and this is just a horrible human being. When you recognize that it's seeking attention, it just opens up, I think, so many more ways to think about even that bad behavior. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that.
Okay,
folks, this is Pamela Brewer. We're going away, but not for long. We'll be right back. Richard, there's a way to think about your child's bad behavior clearly as though he or she has spent their last 24 hours trying to figure out a way that's going to make your life a living nightmare, or you can choose to see it as them reaching out in a negative way for your attention. How do you bridge that gap, if that gap exists in your mindset? How do you go from saying to yourself, my child is just a horrible human being who wants to make my life miserable, to, wow, this kid is really reaching out, and it's not the best of ways, but they're trying to connect with me?
So I wanted to say something I realized I forgot to say it, which is when your child is sending you over the edge, it's very important to not let them know that they're sending you over the edge.
Okay.
It's very important to not go over the edge.
Okay.
If you have to separate yourself from the situation and just go, you know, I can't talk to you when you behave this way. So, you know, either you can go to your room or you need to leave me alone here. But whatever you need to do, you need to count to 10 and you need to regain your composure.
Okay.
Because I think losing your composure in front of your children is never a positive thing. Okay?
Okay.
And then as far as the ability to, once you're able to address it calmly, you know, mm-hmm. one of the keys to dealing with a child's tantrum is to not tantrum yourself.
Okay.
And so when
Fair
your
enough.
Kid's having a tantrum and you're all embarrassed because they're behaving in this way and it's like, you know, crazy, they're in a restaurant, you know, the options that I've had are, first off, I never like yell at them or get upset or hit them. I just go, if you continue to do this, then I'm going to have to take you out of the restaurant. And once you make a statement like that, you need to follow through.
Okay.
So if they continue to tantrum, you take them out of the restaurant and you say, we're going to be out here. I mean, it doesn't matter that it's putting you out. You know, we're back to the emotional generosity.
Okay.
Your pancakes just got delivered and you're really hungry, but your kid's being an idiot. So you have to take your kid out of the restaurant, even though your pancakes are there.
Okay.
And you do that and you take them out and you go, now you can tantrum all you want out here. There's nobody to disturb. But the tantrum isn't getting to you. And you say to your kid, do you see me tantrum? Do I do this? Is this how people behave in the world? And they're, you know, they kind of calm down because it's not achieving the goal for them.
Okay.
That behavior, that tantrum is designed to get you to react. And if you don't react to the tantrum, and the tantrum is just the smaller version of the disobedient older child, if the tantrum doesn't get you to react, then your child doesn't use it as a lever with you.
Mm.
You know, I used to do things that might embarrass my child. I might ask somebody a question in public, or I might talk to the mother of a friend of theirs or the father of a friend of theirs, and they go, oh, God, don't do that. Or I would, you know, make a speech before a school assembly about not leaving when your kid finishes performing because it's not fair to all the other kids. That would embarrass my children.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always say to my kids, I can't embarrass you. The only person who can embarrass you is you.
Mm-hmm.
You are not responsible for my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let my behavior affect the way you feel. We are responsible for our own behavior. And that teaches them to be responsible for their behavior and to not allow that sort of external influence stuff to get to them. Just like I'm responsible for the tantrum, you're responsible for the tantrum.
So it's interesting because along our entire conversation, we've been talking about a series of teachable moments. And in fact, when those moments occur, what you're suggesting is that as a parent, you actually take the time to teach in that moment, to actually say something to your child about what's going on, not ignore the moment.
Exactly. Somebody recently told me that I was a didact. And I had to look it up, but a didact is apparently someone who's going to teach you a lesson whether you want it or not. And that, I guess, I got from my parents, which was there's a lesson in everything. And even if you go back to it later, even if you go back to, do you remember the time in the car when I got so angry at you because you threw that baseball out the window?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was irrationally angry? Here's why I got angry at you. And so, you know, that's part of that applying the rules is always explaining why you have that rule.
Okay.
What's the point of that rule? And then explaining why breaking that rule is either dangerous or not smart or disrespectful. And that's not how we behave in this family. That's not how we behave in this family. We said that a million times. because they'll always go, well, Johnny's parents let him do that. And
exactly.
We always go, that's not how we behave in this family.
Well, when do you get to say, and I quote, because I said so?
You get to say that when it's just time for them to do what you want them to do.
Okay.
And I've replaced because I said so with, this is not a debate.
Ah.
Meaning, you know, this is not a democracy. We're not making, you know, this isn't part of a decision you get to make. This is not a debate. Not because I said so. This is not a debate. Because, you know, a 35-year-old guy fighting with his 6-year-old daughter about whether or not she right. wants to eat her broccoli, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
It's like, you're in control. You're the 35-year-old guy. If you don't want to eat your broccoli, okay. Then I guess you won't get anything in exchange for the broccoli. Or try a bite. You have to try a bite. If you try a bite, then I'll let you off the hook.
All right. So what I'm hearing throughout our conversation is setting an example, making the rules, applying the rules, respecting ourselves, and teaching in all things. So here's my question about today's world. Every time, I think, if not every time, 99.9% of the time, if you turn on the television, you turn on the radio, you turn on the internet, and there's something that's being said or done that is overtly sexualized and often disrespectful. But that's what the kids in the world see today, because that's what we all see today. What do you as a parent do with that? Do you try to shield your child from that? Do you talk to them about that? What do you do?
I think it falls back into the set an example category because, you know, so we've raised 3 boys and we have a 19-year-old daughter and she's a sophomore in college. And, you know, she pretty much followed the line of her mother, who is a woman who demands respect and operates in the world with confidence. But, you know, I open doors for my wife and I defer to her and tell her when she's looking great. And, you know, we in our family set this example of how one treats other people. And I think, you know, the whole sexualization and the whole concept of social media and all that, what happens is, again, you come to home. And home for us is this peaceful, respectful place where we can discuss that stuff. And
okay.
We did discuss it at the dinner table. And she, you know, we had this term, the boys brought home this term, oh, she's a dirty girl. And there were dirty girls. And dirty girls were the girls who were sort of the hippie girls who were, you know, they didn't shave. They were like kind of the dirty girls. And so it created this perspective of who are the girls that are like your mom, who is hygienic and takes advantage of trying to look her best all the time, and your little sister who your mother has been very careful about styling, and you guys, you know, she also has an input on their look, and mine, by the way. But, you know, the point is that we just set it up that these are the values that we have in our family.
Okay.
And that one of those values isn't being overtly sexual or, you know, disrespectful to men or women or other people's property or other people's physical space, that we set that example. And they take that with them in the world, and it gives them an objectivity about all those other things. And then they sometimes come back and they say, well, you know, my roommate is crazy. She goes out with these boys, and then she comes home, and they've hurt her feelings because she slept with them, and they don't care about her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of commentary we get from our daughter. It's like,
wow.
It's not like she's the one doing it. They have learned to step back and take a look and evaluate the world, not be sucked into it. And I don't know, you know, the reason I wrote my book was because I didn't study all this stuff in school. I just kept observing things.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having children who conformed to this. And we did this pretty accidentally. I mean, my wife has her master's in special education. She's extremely patient. She taught me about positive reinforcement because I came from a father who did a lot of spanking.
Mm-hmm.
But in our house, she said things like, I really like the way you're treating your little brother. I really like the way you guys are sitting there and doing your homework.
Mm-hmm.
And she was extremely positive. And I had to learn from that. And the reason I know that you can learn from this is because I did. And I ended up deciding I'm going to write a book that tries to capture what I've learned over these years And, you know, it sounds like I brag a lot about my children, and I'm very proud of them, but it wasn't easy. It wasn't always perfect, and everybody can do it if they keep in mind what their end goal is, which is to create a child who gets along in the world, can deal with adversity, is respectful, because that helps them get along in the world, and it makes them good employees. So, you know, I just think that teaching them to deal with adversity and understanding the example that you set will keep that social media and that advertising bombardment from pushing them off track.
Speaking of social media, just very quickly, what's your take on how involved parents should be in their children's social media lives?
Well, you know, we did not let our daughter go on Facebook until she was probably 12 or 13, when her peers were on Facebook. And we had a family meeting about it, and the brothers decided that she could not be their friend on Facebook because their lives were full of things like beer parties in college.
Okay.
So they didn't want her to see those pictures. So we as a family all agreed she could go on Facebook, but she could only have friends who were her peers. And then, you know, my wife and I are on Facebook, and what we would do is, you know, we didn't snoop. I mean, we really didn't behave defensively, but we did know what she was up to for most of the time. We were her friends on Facebook. We friended her, so we could see the kind of stuff she was posting. But we never, ever responded to her posts, and we never, ever allowed her friends to befriend us.
Okay.
But we didn't want to be friends with her friends.
Okay.
We were just there in the world.
Gotcha. Okay.
Lurking, as they say.
Richard Greenberg, it really, the time has flown by. It has been delightful talking to you and learning about how you raised your children so that other people would like to be around them. And quite frankly, it sounds like you like to be around them yourself as well, which is such a delight.
Again, they still crack me up. They still crack me up.
The name of the book, Raising Children That Other People Like to Be Around, Five Common Sense Musts from a Father's Point of View. Richard Greenberg, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do. I am Common Sense Dad. So if you go to www.commonsensedad.com, you can see things I write once or twice a month and articles that I think are interesting that I post. I'd love it if you would sign up to get emails when I post new things. And then I'm Common Sense Dad on Twitter. I'm Common Sense Dad on Instagram. I'm Common Sense Dad on Google+. So basically, I'm Common Sense Dad.
I was getting that feeling.
Yeah, it's common sense from my point of view. It's like, don't let your kids drive you crazy. There's no point.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Dr. Brewer.
And
take care.
Thank you as well. And folks, thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to take the place of any work you may choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand at myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, send me an email to Pamela, PAMELA, at mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. And folks, you remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.